You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
Hello, Launch Street. I'm so excited. Yay for today's interview. Today, I have Dre Baldwin. He is the world's only work on your game expert, a 9-year professional basketball player. Dre teaches mental toughness, self-confidence, and self-discipline to athletes, entrepreneurs, and business professionals. Dre has appeared in national campaigns with Nike, Finish Line, Wendy's, Gatorade, Buick, Wilson Sports, Stash Investments, and Dime Magazine. Dre has been blogging since 2005 and started publishing to YouTube in 2006. He has over 5,500 videos published with daily content going out to his 120,000 plus subscribers and being viewed over 40 million times. Dre speaks, coaches, and consults business professionals on mental toughness, confidence, and discipline. He has given not one, but 3 TED Talks, published 13 books. Dre's work on Your Game podcast is ranked in iTunes' top 100 education broadcasts. A Philadelphia native and Penn State alum, Dre now lives in Miami. Dre, thank you so much for being here today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to dig in. So let's just start with a little bit of context. Tell us just a little bit more about your background, kind of where you came from and that journey to where you are today.
Well, I come from the city of Philadelphia. I went to school at Penn State University, the Altoona campus for basketball. It's an NCAA Division III school. So for those not familiar with sports, Division I is the sports you see on TV, where all the coaches make the big money and March Madness and the college football bowl games. I was at Division III, which is 2 tiers below that, where the majority of athletes go pro in something other than the sport that they played in college. So coming out of college, it was going to be an uphill battle for me to become a pro athlete. My sport was basketball. The school I went to, no one had ever come out of that school and gone pro in ball. Even the players, and my stats in college weren't even that impressive. Even players who put up great statistics didn't get chances to play professionally because the teams professionally would look at their statistics and say, okay, well, these are great, but look who you were playing against. You were playing against other tier 3 players. So I was going to have to go market and promote myself to get out there. I ended up going to an exposure camp, several exposure camps over the years, which is basically a job fair for athletes where you get to show your game, you play your sport in front of the decision makers. So instead of handing out resumes with a suit on, you put on your gear and you play your sport in front of other people who want a job. And the coaches, agents, scouts, team owners, and managers, they evaluate you. I went to an exposure camp, played great at that camp. And that video was basically my golden ticket into getting into professional basketball. The challenge was that video was on, I don't know if everyone remembers, VHS tapes.
VHS tapes. Way back in the day.
Yeah, way back in the day, 2005. So on that VHS tape, I had to get it transferred over to a CD, went to an audiovisual store, got it transferred over. I put that footage on this brand new video site called YouTube.com because I just wanted it somewhere for safekeeping. And that video basically started me in building what became the Dre All Day and Work On Your Game Incorporated brands, because there was an audience of people who wanted some basketball instruction and they didn't have anyone around them physically who could teach it. So I became that person. So when you go online these days and you see someone, I was actually in the gym this morning. I seen a girl on the elliptical machine doing it. I thought she was doing FaceTime, but I could see her phone. She was doing an Instagram live stream on the elliptical. If you go on the internet these days and you see an athlete working out and they put the footage online to get attention or motivate or inspire or just to show off, you are watching Dre All Day, because I was the first person to do it in any sport on the internet. I pioneered that platform and I took that into what I do online with my website, and it eventually became books and speaking, simply because athletes would ask me questions about not only how do you get good, but how do you stay motivated? How do you stay inspired? How do you remain confident? How do you stay disciplined to show up every single day? What do you do when it's not working out, when you don't make the team, when you don't get a job that you're trying to get? All of that turned into the mental game stuff. And I found that to really be my niche area, teaching people that mental game stuff that they can translate not only to sports, but also to business and everything else in life.
I want to back up for a second and ask you about the exposure camps, because I don't know that I've heard you talk about that before.
Right.
And as you were telling the story, I was thinking about how that's a lot like life. So you started, you know, you're at a third tier school, so you're not starting by standing out or having the advantage or being in that position that people are looking for you or your product or service, your business, your ideas. And then you go to this exposure camp where I'm assuming you're one of a lot of people trying to get the attention of these coaches, right? Or these positions. And I clearly am not the sports person, so bear with my analogies, my language. But, right, so you're there, you're on the court with other people. Everybody's trying to stand out, which, again, I think a lot like work or entrepreneurship where you were trying to, you know, avoid being, you know, one of the many and adding to the noise. So when you think back to that experience, how did you prepare for it? How did you think about that as you went onto the court and knew that the competition was really fierce?
That's a great question. And to go right off of that question, I get that question often from athletes these days. A basketball player will come to me and say, Dre, I practice all the time. I use your drills off YouTube. I buy your programs. But there's this one guy at the park. Every time I play against him, he always beats me because he's taller than me. So when I try to shoot, he's taller than me. So when I shoot the ball, he can block it. And when I try to do a crossover, he can steal it. And when I try to make a move, he already knows the move. And when I'm on defense, he's bigger, so he can kind of back me down and shoot over top of me. And he's quicker than me. And no matter what I do, I can't seem to beat this one guy. Or they'll just have an idea. Well, what if I go to the court and there's somebody who is bigger, stronger, faster, more experienced than me? What am I supposed to do against that guy? And the number one answer is, and the answer to the question that you asked me, Tamara, is if you go into a competition and you're thinking about the competition, you're already losing. Mm-hmm. See, when I went to that exposure camp, to give a little bit of detail to it, I was in 2005. The camp was in Orlando, Florida. I was living in Philadelphia at the time. And I drove, me and a friend of mine, two of my college teammates, we drove from Philly to Orlando on Friday night. The camp started Saturday morning at 9 a.m. sharp. We parked in the parking lot and walked into the gym as the people running the camp were giving their opening remarks. So we didn't even sleep the night before. Benefits of being 23 years old.
I was going to say, man, that would exhaust me.
Right. Yeah. It would exhaust me now. But back then I was excited because I'm thinking about my opportunity. All I knew is at the time I was actually working at Bally Total Fitness, the gym, selling memberships. And once our area manager had come and given us this sheet of paper that had these eight, I guess, motivational or inspirational statements on it. And there were two specific statements that were on there that I always remembered. One of them was bloom where you are planted. No matter what your situation is or where you're at, your job is to give the best possible effort you can where you are. And the second one was, you got to do something to stand out. If you want people to remember your name, you must be outstanding. You have to do something that makes people remember you. And that's all I was thinking when I went to that exposure camp. And just to give you a bit of detail, in the game, first game of the camp, there are 200 players at this camp, as you guessed. 200 people at the camp. Everyone's trying to get a job playing professional sports. There are hundreds of agents and scouts and decision makers in the stands. I remember I started the first game. I played the first maybe 4 or 5 minutes, and I didn't do anything of consequence. A timeout was called. We went into the huddle. The coach gave us a little bit of instruction. Now, mind you, all of us just met 10 minutes ago, the coach too, so it was not like we had set plays or anything, but the coach told us a little bit about what he wanted us to do, but I wasn't really listening to him. I had to have a conversation with myself, and I thought to myself, Dre, like, this is your opportunity. Like, I had saved up what little money I could just to come to that camp, to get the 3 days off from work, to drive down there, the $250 to pay to get into the camp, and I thought to myself, you got to do something to stand out. If you don't do anything at this camp to stand out, you can never say you didn't get the opportunity and you may never get this shot again. So I went back in the game and I just thought to myself, okay, the next time I get the ball, I'm going to do something. So the next time I got the ball, I drove to the basket. I almost dunked on this guy. I made the shot, but I could hear the gasps from the crowd. And a few minutes later, a guy shot the ball, and you can see this on my very first YouTube video if anybody ever looks it up. A guy shot the ball. It bounced off the rim really high. And I basically jumped up, caught the ball in the air above the rim and dunked it over all these people. And the crowd just went absolutely nuts, everyone who was watching. And that moment right there, that split second right there was what changed my life. That was what started my career. I knew I had to do something to stand out. I wasn't thinking about the competition. I didn't know who the competition was anyway. All I knew is I had to do something that made people remember me. And it's not even that you had to play so great in every game. We played, I think, 4 games over the course of the camp. It was that split second that made everyone know my name and say, hey, number 83, that guy's pretty good. Just from that one play. It's just doing that one thing to make people remember you.
There's two things that you said in there that I hope people listening really pay attention to, because it's such a powerful story. One is that exactly what you keep saying, which is you shouldn't be thinking about the competition. You should be thinking about yourself. And the second thing is, you know, you talked about accountability of like, this is my chance. And I can't say that I didn't have that chance if I don't step up and try my hardest and do my best. And so I think that both of those are really important, because when you're trying to be successful, you really do have to take accountability for where you are and what you're trying to accomplish versus keeping hoping and expecting life to happen to you. So I think those are really key. Talk a little bit about how you transitioned from sports to entrepreneurship.
Well, it was really actually going back to my basketball career. It was the fact that even though going to that exposure camp did help me, and that was in the summer of 2005. So by September of 2005, I had signed my first professional contract. My career was not this straight, as everyone has seen the little meme where people think success is this curve that goes straight up and to the right. Yeah, it wasn't like that. Yeah, it was going all these different directions, backwards many times. And there were many situations in my career where I didn't have a contract. The reason why my YouTube channel and my presence, my brand presence grew the way that it did, because I was spending a whole lot of time home in Miami. I eventually moved to Miami. I was home in Miami a lot. I was still going to the gym every day to work out because I had to be ready if and when the opportunity came. But a lot of times that opportunity wasn't coming. So two things were happening there, parallel stories. One was athletes would watch my videos and they would say, oh, wow, you're really good. You're helping me with my game. And eventually, once they saw that I was good and that I cared, they started asking me questions about me. Like, hey, who are you? Where are you from? Where'd you play? Who do you play for now? Are you on a team? Did you ever try out for the NBA? So I started answering their questions. I would make videos telling them, hey, this is who I am. This is where I'm from. This is, you know, where I've played. This is what I'm trying to do right now. So people started to learn my story. That was one part of it. And then the other part was, and this leading into entrepreneurship, the other part was there were times that I didn't have a job. And eventually I said to myself, this is around 2009, I'll never have any control over my own destiny if I keep repeating the same process. Because being a pro athlete, you don't really call the shots. Who calls the shots is the person who offers you a contract. And if no one offers you a contract, you don't have a shot. So I asked myself a really good question at this time. And the question was this: how can I continue doing the thing that I love doing, which is playing basketball, sharing my thoughts and my mindsets and ideas with the public at large, while at the same time making some money doing it? And that question is what got me into entrepreneurship. Because what happened was in 2009, 2010, I would always get questions. I had about maybe 1,000 videos on YouTube at this point. And I would always get questions from athletes. Hey, Dre, can you make a program for me? I'm this size, I'm this height, I'm this age. Can you make a program for me to work out for the next 6 weeks so I can be on the basketball team? And I would always turn people down because I had hundreds of people asking me this question. Like, how am I going to make individual programs for all these people? But eventually someone left me a comment on a video on YouTube. And he said, Dre, how about you just take the stuff that you do all the time, maybe write it down in some way, organize it, and then put it out so everybody else can take it and they can just follow what you do instead of us just getting one video or one drill at a time like you do every day on YouTube. And I said, okay, that's a good idea. I can do that, but it's going to take me some time and effort to put it together. So would everyone be willing to pay for it? And this is, mind you, this is all happening in the comments to a YouTube video with random people who I don't know. And people responded, yeah, we'll pay for it as long as it doesn't cost too much, because a lot of them were young athletes. It's 13 to 24 demographic. So that night, I had read Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week at the time, and he had talked about putting up like a little dummy website with free hosting and pay $5 for Google ads, because back then you could get seen for $5 worth of Google ads. And I made these basketball programs, simple PDF documents. I mean, 6-page PDF where I had a link to a video. I described the workout, maybe ball handling or how to jump high or how to shoot a basketball. They were $5 a piece. I put them up on this website called hoophandbook.com, and people started buying them at $5 a piece. And to this day, we still run Hoop Handbook. We process over 11,000 orders to date. And that was how I got into entrepreneurship. Now, how I got into the topics that I talk about now was simply people just asking me, hey, how do you stay motivated when you say you want to play basketball professionally, but every time we watch you, you're in an empty gym in Miami practicing. How do you keep showing up every single day and be disciplined to do that? How do you remain confident? What drives you to keep doing this when you don't even know when you're going to get another opportunity, if at all? And that's when I started talking about the motivation, the confidence, the discipline, the initiative, what it really takes to be a professional. And that has all led to what you know of today.
So let's dig into those, because your thing is, as you alluded to, is mental toughness, discipline, and confidence. I want to kind of break them down a little bit, talk about their definitions, why they're so important, what they provide you. And then if you can give us a business and sports example of each of those or how they work together, I think that would be helpful. So let's start with mental toughness. Talk to us a little bit about what that is and kind of what's involved with it and why it's so important.
Okay. Well, if you would, I can basically explain all three of them to you together.
Sure.
When it comes to discipline, discipline is showing up every single day and doing the work that you signed up to do. In my opinion, discipline is what makes a pro a pro. See, people think being a professional means you have a contract or you make X amount of dollars or you play for a certain team. Mike Tyson, I remember I was watching this Mike Tyson movie, the biopic of Mike Tyson. When the guy who taught him to box, this old Italian guy named Customato, was about to die, Mike was about to fight his first championship fight to win the championship belt. Customato was literally in his deathbed, and Mike said to him, man, like, you're like my father. You're the person who taught me to box. If you're not healthy, I'm not fighting in this fight this weekend. And Customato said to Mike, he said, Mike, do you know what a professional is? Mike said, yeah, it's a person who gets paid to, and cut him off. He said, no, Mike, a professional has nothing to do with money. Professional is a person who goes out and performs no matter what he's feeling on the inside. That's what being a pro is about. And that's the discipline of showing up for a job that you signed up for, even when you don't feel like showing up. And that's not about sports. That can be in business. You can look at a parent. Parents are professionals. They have to be disciplined and show up even when they don't feel like dealing with that kid. They don't feel like waking up in the middle of the night. You had to do that stuff. Why? Because you signed up. You signed up for that job by having that child. In business, you're a professional. You're going to show up every day and you're going to take it to the max because of the fact that you're a pro, not because they pay you for it, not because someone told you to do it, but because that's your job. That's what a pro does. Now, second thing is confidence. Confidence is you got to have the ability to put yourself out there. And putting yourself out there can mean starting a blog or a website or putting out videos on the internet or starting a podcast, starting your own business. It could also mean picking up the phone and making those cold calls that you don't like making, or sending those emails, or approaching that person who could possibly change your life, who you've been nervous about stepping to. That's what having confidence is. And if you're not confident, there's no way you can be a professional in anything that's high level, whether we're talking about sports, we're talking entrepreneurship, because in the world of entrepreneurship now, anybody can become an entrepreneur in 5 minutes. So with all that noise out there, what are you willing to say? What are you willing to do to stand out so that people actually notice you and remember you? You got to have the confidence to put yourself out there. And mental toughness is the ability to continue to show up doing the work, to continue being confident and putting yourself out there, even when the success that you expected to have arrived by this point has not yet arrived. See, mental toughness is what kept me showing up into the gym every single day and working on my game, even when I wasn't having a contract, even when I wasn't sure if I would ever get another contract, even when I could look around and say, you know what, I could have went and got a job at some financial institution out of college with my degree in business management and marketing from Penn State University. I could have been doing a whole lot more than I'm doing right now in this empty gym practicing by myself. If it hadn't been for that camera, no one would even know I was doing that work, and I still would have been doing it. So mental toughness is the ability to continue showing up, putting yourself out there, even when the goals you've set, you have yet to reach, and the success you thought you would get has not yet arrived, and everybody else who thought they were professionals, they've asked off the job. They say, you know what, I'm not going to do this anymore. Because I've known players who were at my level who didn't keep going when they didn't yet get the success. So the mental toughness is what keeps people persisting longer than everyone else.
Well, to what you were saying earlier, I think that's really true in entrepreneurship and business too. I can't tell you the number of people I interact with, and I'm sure you do too, who just don't have those, that mental toughness, that discipline, and that confidence. They may have a great idea, maybe even a brilliant business model, but they don't have the fortitude to actually do it every single day.
Absolutely. That's the key.
So talk to me a little bit about what I would have to do. Like, if I woke up this morning and I'm like, yes, Dre, I got to get these things. I don't think I have them quite yet, the mental toughness, the discipline, and the confidence. How do I get them? And let me actually, I have like three questions circling in my head at once, but okay. Can everybody have it? I guess is my first question. And then my second one is, if I wake up this morning and I'm like, yeah, I'm in, what do I do?
Absolutely. Everybody can have it. And that's the great thing about these three principles. They're not based on talent. They're not based on any outside resources. You don't have to know anybody. It doesn't matter where you're from. You just must decide to have them, because discipline just means showing up every single day. So when you don't feel like showing up, you make yourself feel like it. That's how you develop discipline. Confidence, you have to, I've actually done a TED talk on this topic, is you have to put yourself in a frame of mind that you already are the person you plan on becoming. And you must carry yourself as that person before you've actually gotten anything material that represents it. I heard 50 Cent say, one of my favorite entertainers, he says, you have to see yourself as a success even when there is nothing around you in your physical environment that says you will be a success. And if you look around at the people, the great achievers of this world, the people who left their marks, those are, they all had that. They all have seen themselves as greater than they actually were at that point. And the one challenge with confidence, though, is this, because I tell people, listen, your confidence should always outpace your achievements. You should always believe in yourself at a higher level than what you've actually done. The problem people have with that is we've socially programmed ourselves to have a problem with people who do that. We call them arrogant. We call them cocky. We say they think they're full of themselves. But the fact of the matter is, if all you believe in, the only level you believe in yourself is the actual level you've achieved, that's exactly where you're going to stay. And this is how some people can get to a certain point that may be called quote unquote success in their lives. But then 10 years go by, 20 years, 50 years go by, and they're still in the exact same place because they won't raise their level of confidence above what they've done because they have conditioned themselves to believe that they should not believe in themselves any higher than what they've achieved to that point. And that's holding people back, because if you're in neutral, if you're in life and you're staying in the same spot, the entire world is still moving forward. Literally, the world is moving at all times. If you're standing still while the world's moving, then by default, you're losing. So the confidence means putting yourself mentally at a state that is above where you are right now and keeping it there until your abilities or your achievements catch up to it. And then you do it again and again.
I was going to say, and then you leapfrog. So what do you do with those people? Because, you know, that hits a little bit home. I think I've experienced that multiple times. I think a lot of us trying to be more innovative, trying to push the limits like you are, experience that where other people, you know, push back on you. And sometimes it's very obvious and sometimes it's very subversive. It's not in your face. It's just these little comments, attitudes, behaviors that chip away. So how do you deal with those people?
That's a good question. I get asked that often. People say, well, what do you do when people are kind of against that? Or how do you deal with those people? My answer is you don't deal with them. You don't have to deal with those people. You don't have to deal with someone else's issue. I mean, if someone doesn't like you or they disagree with you, they are free to do so. Because guess what? If you go and conform and do whatever they want you to do, there are going to be some other people who disagree with you. There's always going to be someone who's against or someone who disagrees or someone who doesn't like what you're doing. So if you're always adjusting to that, you keep whittling away and editing yourself based on what other people think. Before you know it, there's not going to be any of you left. There's not going to be anything left of you to give. So you have to decide who you want to be, and who you want to be must be more important to you than what anybody else wants you to be or how anybody else wants you to present yourself or how anyone else wants you to live your life. Because what I heard Grant Cardone say this once, the first people will be against you, they'll be staunchly against you, then they'll ridicule you, and then finally they're going to accept you. So you have to decide what's more important to you, the acceptance of these people now or the fact that you want to be who you want to be in life. Because until you become the person who you need to be, nothing you do is going to get you the right result. And this is how people can come to you and say, hey, I did everything right. I followed all the examples. I copied exactly what this wildly successful person over here did, yet I didn't get the same result. And that's because they hadn't become the right type of person yet. Because you're trying to be what somebody else wants you to be. You're trying to copy someone else's formula. It's not going to work until you become you first.
You know, and the other thing I would add to that too, because I love what you're talking about here, is that, you know, we look at those great innovators and successful people in the world, and whether it's the Michael Jordans or the Elon Musks, and we see only the success. We see the tip of the iceberg. So we don't see, a lot of us don't see all of the heartache and the rejection and the lack of acceptance that led up to that. Because, you know, success is a very, I think it's a very backward-looking view often. So we look at someone who's done something successful and we're like, that person's amazing. I love what they've done. Oh, they're so bold. But we didn't see all that other stuff that you were just talking about and all the friction and resistance that happened to even get them to that point.
Exactly. And that's something that I try every single day. I try to kind of pull the cover back from behind that, which is how people got to know me. That wasn't actually the plan in the beginning, but that's how people got to know me, is that I'm showing you the grind. I'm showing you the hustle. I'm showing you the work on your game that comes before the success. And all, especially in these days, now that we have, everyone is basically a news channel. Everyone has their own broadcasting station. People can broadcast what they want you to see. And I say this often to people, like, people show you, when you get on the internet and you look on Instagram or somebody's website, they're showing you what they want you to see. They control that message. What you're looking at is someone's highlights. And you can't control, you can't compare your 100% behind the scenes, because you're seeing everything that you do, to somebody else's highlights. You have to take that. It's like a TV show. It's like you're watching a movie. When you're watching a movie, you can get engulfed in a movie while you're watching it, but in the end, you can walk out and know you were just watching a movie. And that's what you're looking at when you see other people's success, or other people looking shiny, or other people having all these awards and accolades. Don't compare the 100% that you have to the 1% that those people are showing you. Compare you to you yesterday, for a fear of being trite, but that's pretty much what it is.
Yeah. Well, it's constant improvement of yourself, but I really appreciate what you're saying about, you know, social media is this interesting thing. And basically, don't get stuck in the comparison game, because you're never going to win, ever.
Exactly. It's always just not worth it.
Yeah. So talk, I'm flipping gears a little bit, but you have this thing about the third day rule. Will you talk a little bit about what that is and how to apply it?
Yeah, pretty simple. Let's take an example of someone who goes to the gym. They haven't been to the gym maybe in a year, 6 months. They haven't ever worked out maybe. And they decide, I'm going to get myself in shape. So they go by, maybe it's New Year's, maybe it was for their birthday. So they go hire a personal trainer. They sign up for a boot camp class, join a CrossFit gym, or get a membership. They do something so they can start taking care of their body. They go to the gym the first day and they're excited. I mean, it's a brand new thing. You got some new workout clothes. You're going to a new location. You're working with new people. You spent some money on this. So you're like, hey, I'm gonna make sure I get my money's worth out of this investment. You show up the first day, that trainer kicks your butt all over the gym because you are not in shape. But right. You drag yourself home, drag yourself to the car, and you say, hey, I'm doing this. I signed up for this. I'm doing this. The second day, things are still pretty new. I mean, you have a little bit of soreness from the first day, but it's still a brand new thing. It's kind of like if you got a new car. I mean, it's not old on the second day. Second time you drive it, it's still a pretty new car. You're still getting used to where everything is. You still like the new car smell. You like people seeing you. Hey, you got a new car. So the second day you show up to the gym, trainer kicks your butt again. You drive yourself home, or you drag yourself home, look in the bathroom mirror or the rearview mirror in that car, and you say to yourself, hey, this is tough, but I knew it was going to be tough. I knew I had to stay motivated and determined. I'm doing this. Now, the third day, things aren't so new anymore. On the third day, those gym shoes look like concrete shoes. On the third day, that smiling, bubbly person at the front desk who always says hi to you, you don't even want to look at them. You don't even want to speak to that person. On the third day, you don't want to hear your trainer's mouth. On the third day, your body and mind are having a difference of opinion because your entire body's sore now. You work the upper body the first day, the lower body the second day. You don't have anything left to get sore. You have soreness in places you didn't know you could even have. You didn't even know you had muscles there, and you're sore in that place. On the third day, see, that person who joined the gym or hired a trainer, on the third day, what they do is they roll over in bed, grab their phone, and send a text to the trainer and say, hey, just charge me for the session, but I'm not coming in. On the third day, the athlete who doesn't have a contract right now but has been going to the gym every day just doesn't show up because they're thinking, hey, nobody's going to know anyway. Nobody knew when I went the first 2 days. Nobody's going to know if I don't show up this day. In the business world, the professional world, on the third day, you still got to go to work because you're on salary and everybody's going to know if you don't show up. But you show up, but you don't really show up. You're there, but you're not really there. And I'm sure all of us know people who have shown up to work but didn't really show up. They kind of
we've been that person sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We've all been that person. We kind of go through the motions, as they in sports coaches say that. You can't just be out there going through the motions. This is what a lot of people do. So you got three classes of people. You got the amateurs, who are the people who just don't come at all. They are not physically there. They just don't show up and you have no idea what happened to them. Then you have the bench warmers and professional sports. If any of you watch sports, you even if you don't know much about sports, you watch a basketball game, you see the guys at the end of the bench waving towels, or maybe they even have street clothes on. They're obviously a part of the organization, but they're not playing. You don't know their name. Even if they have their uniform on, you can't know their name because they never take off the warm-up jacket, so you can't see the name on the back of the jersey. Those are the bench warmers, the people who kind of show up sometimes, but not all the time. And then you have the professionals. You have the all-stars. They're the people who show up and take it all out. They take it to the max every single day simply because that's their job. Not because they're motivated, not because they watch some inspirational YouTube video in the car on the way there, but because as a professional, that's the job that they signed up for. And I remember Michael Jordan, my favorite basketball player of all time, he wrote in one of his books that he knew every single night when he was playing for the Bulls that there would be at least one person in that audience who had saved up their money, rearranged their schedule, maybe even drove to the city just to see Michael Jordan play one time. And because of that, he knew he had to really be Michael Jordan every single night that he played. He took that as his duty, as his responsibility, even though the money was coming to him, whether he showed up or not. That's what a professional is. And that's what it means to deal with the third day. And the third day doesn't have to be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or the third consecutive time you've done something. You can have a third day every day for a week. Some of us, we can have a third day all year. Every day
Friday.
Could be a third day. Yeah, the whole you can have a third day every day for a year, or every day for a month. The third day is just the day where you don't necessarily feel like it, but you do it anyway because that's your job and that's what a professional does.
Do you have any rituals or techniques that you can share around that? So let's say I'm having a third day. Mm-hmm. And I show up to work, whether that is my own company or I'm working for somebody else, and I'm having that day. What do you do to flip the switch so that you at least do what, you know, and not just get through it, because I don't want to be a bench warmer. Mm-hmm. I want to really be a professional. What's your ritual or technique for getting into that zone?
Well, number one thing is you have to start your day every single day. You got to give your mind the map. You got to give your mind the picture of what's going to happen. So, for example, if you were about to run a 100-meter dash, you wouldn't just hop out of your car, get on the track, and just start sprinting as fast as you could because you're going to pull a hamstring or something. You wouldn't put a frozen turkey in the oven without turning the oven on. You got to warm it up, get some heat going in there so it can actually get cooked. What I find a lot of human beings do is we wake up, then we start working, we start replying to text messages, we start doing business, we start reading email and responding to emails without even warming our minds up. We don't tell our mind exactly what we want. And this is how many people go through life, drifting. They have no idea where they're going, what they're going to do to get there, or who they need to be in the process. So every single day, this is what I tell people, every day you must start the day by telling your mind, number one, what's the purpose? What are we doing? What is the actual goal here? Why am I getting up? What am I going out into this world for? What's the purpose? Second thing is, what are you willing to give? What are you going to give in order to get there? So if your purpose is, I need to show up to work today and take it to the max. Okay, let's say that's the purpose for today. What are you willing to do in order to do that? Okay, I'm going to show up. I'm going to make sure I'm there 15 minutes early. I'm going to make sure I respond to email for the first 30 minutes of my day. I'm going to work for 2 hours at this point. Then I'm going to take a break. Then I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. You lay out exactly what the plan is in your mind. And the third thing is, this is the most important question. Because everybody knows about setting goals. I go speak somewhere and I say, okay, who here has goals? Everyone raises their hand. Who wrote them down? Most of the people raise their hand. How many of you know that in order to reach your goals, you have to work hard and show up and be disciplined and do the stuff even when you don't feel like it? Everyone raises their hand. Everyone knows about steps one and step two. Set a goal and work hard. So why, if everyone knows about it and how we all know people who work hard all the time and have goals, why aren't most people successful? It's not because they don't work hard. It's not because they don't work hard enough. We see these successful people win an award and they say, well, yeah, it's hard work, hard work. If that was the thing, then why isn't everybody successful? It's because most people don't know about steps 3 and 4. Now, I told you step 4 was to give yourself the map. Step 3 is ask yourself, who do I need to be? Who do I need to be as a person? Because, yes, I know I need to show up. I know I need to work hard, even though I don't feel like it. If everybody knows that, too. I mean, this is not news. So the thing is, who do I need to be as a person to make that happen? Ask yourself, who's someone who would show up and work really hard today? Who's someone who would show up and give their all out effort today? What physical traits, mental traits rather, what is that person thinking? Because who I need to be is based on what you think. Okay, who you are as a person is based on your thoughts. So what's going through the mind of a Michael Jordan? What's going through the mind of Steve Jobs? What's going through the mind of, I don't know, LeBron James, anyone you look up to, someone who you would say you know what, if I could have that person's frame of mind, I could do a lot of great things. So ask yourself, what is going through that person's mind? What do they think about? How do they get themselves to show up? And the great thing about the world we're in today, in 2017, is you can find out. You don't even have to imagine. You can read their books. You can follow them on Twitter.
Right.
You can read their blog. You can go read a book that was written about them if they haven't written their own yet. You can go find every interview they've ever done, listen to it, download it, record it, take screenshots of it. You can find out directly from the source what is going through that person's mind. And if you can adopt that frame of mind, you can become whatever type of person you want to become.
You know, it's the things that you're just talking about. So purpose, get what do you need to give, and then who do you need to be? I got them right. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's interesting. I was just, this is totally personal, but you know, I'm like, I like you. I like to pull back the curtain and just own it. So here it is. I was having this conversation with two girlfriends of mine, both own their own businesses. So the three of us get together a couple times a year and do a business retreat where we hash out our strategies. And it's a really, it's an incredible time. But one of the things that we were talking about is that because the two of them work from their homes, is that, you know, you could spend days without seeing anybody as an entrepreneur, successful or not successful, just you have work to do, you're not out in meetings, you're on computers so often. And one of them was saying, yeah, I mean, I went 3 days without putting a bra on. And we were laughing about it, but then we realized, and what you're saying really just hit home about it, like, hey, that's not how a professional shows up, even if it's in your own home, because the truth is, that, and what she was referring to, obviously, is just being a little bit sloppy and keeping your sweatpants on all day and, you know, that kind of stuff. But that really impacts how you show up, even in typing an email. It's kind of what I hear you saying is that's not how my role models would show up.
Absolutely. And I've actually, I've done that at times too, not gotten dressed. I know I'm going to be replying to emails or I'm working on
book. Oh, yeah, me too.
Right. But I find I get into the frame of mind. If I get dressed, I put on my shoes as if I'm about to go out somewhere, and I live in a condominium. So I'll leave my condo and I'll go downstairs to the common room where there's Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And I work in there, and there may be other people sitting at the table working too. And that puts me more in a, I'm doing business right now. I'm at work. Frame of mind. That works for me. And whatever works for people, they should do it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm so glad you shared that. And I'm going to relay this back to them and make sure they listen to this podcast, because we were laughing about it at the time. But looking back, I realized, wait a minute, what we should have been is scolding ourselves, because that's actually not, and we all have big dreams, big goals. So that's not going to help us in any way get there. So the last thing I kind of want to talk to you about is, you know, I'm all about innovation and kind of pushing the limits, thinking differently about what's right in front of you. A lot of that, I think, takes risk. And a lot of that takes putting yourself out there, which I think really relates to the mental toughness, the discipline, and the confidence that you're talking about. It is hard to be innovative without those things, because you get the pushback, because you've got to be willing to be uncomfortable. But I'd love to get your perspective on that as well, how those things that we've been talking about impact your ability to stand out and be innovative.
Okay, well, I tell people to find an intersection. You have to find an intersection of two things and two things only. Point number one is, what are you good at? What do you have experience in? What do you have some credibility in that you could actually put that information out there and people would say, okay, this individual knows what she's talking about. He knows what he's talking about. He has some credibility. He's been there. And then the second point of the intersection is, what do you give a damn about? Mm-hmm. What do you care about enough that you would put it out there for free on YouTube for 5,000 videos, not even worrying about what you're going to get in exchange for? What would you go start a podcast on and start putting that information out there just because you want to make sure people get that enrichment? What do you give a damn about? Now, we all give a damn about things, but not everybody has that first point. Not everyone has credibility or experience or skill in something. Well, what is it that you've been doing? You got to go out there and get that skill. You got to go out there and get the skill and the thing that you care about. Whatever that is that you give a damn about, if you don't have any skill, well, not everybody's really going to listen to you. And if you have a whole lot of skill in something, but you don't give a damn, no one's really going to want to hear your message because they can tell that you don't care. So you got to find out, what is it that I'm skilled at, number one. And number two, what do I care about? And if you can't yet find that intersection, you have to go make that intersection. And the great thing about our world today, again, is that it's not hard to do it anymore. There are no barriers to entry. Whatever you want to learn, you can go learn a skill online at someone's online course. You can take college courses online these days. And a lot of it you can do at a very low cost. You can do most of it from your home. So go and get the skill of the thing that you care about. If you don't yet have that skill, and then start putting it out there. You can put it out there for free. You can put it out there quickly. You can build your own. You can build your own media company basically at pretty much no cost right now, starting today.
Yeah, it's incredible what we can do today. And I think the beauty is anyone can do it. And the challenge is there's a lot of noise. So you got to do it, but you have to do it in a way that stands out relative to everybody else. I always talk about the ER trap, the trap, the better, stronger, faster, smoother, like that's just not enough anymore. You've got to be different if you want to be successful. But I think being different, just to kind of loop it back to what you're saying, is also about what's you and what you stand for and what you believe in. And if you can bring it from that perspective, you can do it in a unique way.
Absolutely.
So Dre, where can people go to find you?
People can find me, man, I'm in so many places, but my website is dreallday.com is my website. I'm on all the social medias at dreallday on Twitter and Periscope, and my Instagram, Snapchat is at Dre Baldwin. So I'm one or the other at every platform.
Okay. And do you have the YouTube? Did you say the YouTube site? Is that what the last one you said?
Oh, yeah. YouTube is Dre UPT, or you can just look up my name. If you just type in my name on YouTube, you'll see Dre UPT. And my podcast is called Work On Your Game.
So one last question for you is, what's one thing that people would be surprised to know about you, a hobby, a passion, experience?
One thing people would be surprised to know is that I entered a hot dog eating contest. Hot dog eating contest. It was in Coconut Grove, Miami. I wasn't even planning on doing it. I was in Coconut Grove in Miami on the 4th of July. You know how they have the Nathan's hot dog on TV? Well, it wasn't that, but they had one here in Miami. They asked me to be in it, I guess because I just look like a big guy. I had on this tank top, and I guess I look athletic and muscular, and I'm 6'4". So they said, okay, yeah, you look like someone who could eat a bunch of hot dogs. So I get in the hot dog eating contest, and I ate, I think we had 10 minutes or 8 minutes total for the contest. I ate a grand total of two hot dogs. Two hot dogs in the 10 minutes. The reason is, because at the time, I would still eat hot dogs. This is around 2012, so I would still eat hot dogs then. I don't eat hot dogs anymore. But the bread is very hard to digest, the bread, because you had to eat the hot dog and the bun for it to count as one hot dog. And I had seen, obviously, we've all seen the contest on TV, how they dip the bread
in
their
mouth.
Yeah, you're supposed to dip the bread in the water because then it makes it hard. You could just swallow it. But that bread, when it's dipped in water, is disgusting. Like, I had the gag reflex. I couldn't put down that bread. So there was no way I could keep eating them. So I ate two hot dogs, and that was it. And some other guy won. He ate maybe 12.
Oh,
God. So these are professionals. But it's really disgusting trying to force wet bread down the chute. Doesn't work.
I just love that you only ate two.
Yeah.
It's like, I expected you to say 10 or 20 or like something incredible, but no, two. No, no. Dre, thank you so much for coming by today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. Go to LaunchStreet.com.